This is Baseball Tonight, the podcast.
This is the Baseball Tonight podcast for Tuesday, April 20th, 2001. Producing from his home studio in the foothills of Connecticut is Taylor Schwenk. I'm Buster Olney, working from my home studio in New York. On Monday afternoon, we got good news from the Atlanta Braves, who say that Ronald Acuna Jr., who had to come out of Sunday night's game, pointing to his midsection, showing discomfort, well, he's day-to-day with this injury, this mild, what the Braves are saying is a mild abdominal strain. So hopefully he's going to be back in their lineup sooner rather than later. The Phillies placed three players on the injured list due to COVID-19 protocols, and two more coaches weren't with the team for a game Monday against the San Francisco Giants. The source told ESPN's Jesse Rogers that one player tested positive and the others were placed on the list due to contact tracing. Left-handed reliever Jose Alvarado, lefty starter Matt Moore, and infielder Ronald Torres went on the injured list. Cincinnati Reds outfielder Nick Castellanos lost his appeal of a two-game suspension. Taylor, you remember that play? That I'm still a little bit surprised, A, that he got suspended, and B, that he lost his appeal. Because what he did, he slid into home plate, he stood up and he flexed over the pitcher who was covering home plate, and then he kind of backed off. I'm like, really? Two games for that? What did you think?
Yeah, that's lame. As I said at the time, this is so silly. This was kind of like a fun little thing that we were talking about, and to make it suspension worthy is kind of crazy. And Molina was the one charging around and he got off the hook.
Yeah, he didn't get suspended. And I thought initially when Castellanos got this two-game suspension that upon appeal, they reduce it to one and then everyone would move on like it was a plea bargain. But no, they kept it in place. And I'm still not really sure exactly whether or not he should have been suspended in the first place. Miami Marlins outfielder Starling Marte has a fractured rib and will be sidelined for at least a week. This is the announcement coming from the Marlins. He did that taking a swing the other day. All right, let's get to the good stuff. J.D. Martinez led a Red Sox blowout yesterday at Fenway Park.
Swing and a high fly ball. Jumped on this baby. That's deep to left. Back, 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 and it is gone.
Dave O'Brien with Nesson with that call. Lucas Giolito of the White Sox got absolutely obliterated. And to his credit, after the game, he talked about how he really felt like he let the team down with the hole that he dug for them early in this game. The Cardinals had a great day against Joe Ross and the Nationals in Washington.
So it's DeJong at the plate and the pitch. That ball is hit high in the air to left field. It's back to the track, to the wall. Slammer! Paul DeJong has hit his second home run of the game. A big fly, Paul DeJong, and the Cardinals tack on four more. My goodness, did that ball carry.
That from KMOX. Yeah, DeJong hit his first homer off Joe Ross, and the Cardinals continued to feast on the relievers that followed him. Making Moves is brought to you by LinkedIn Jobs. Build your winning team today. Go to linkedin.com/sports. And yesterday, Brian Cashman, Yankees general manager, well, he was making moves. He stepped up to a microphone in a Zoom call with reporters, and he fielded questions about the team's lousy 5-10 start. Here was Brian Cashman.
It's certainly a disappointing start. We obviously know we're better than this, and you know, but we also know, being in this game a long time, that this is also part of seasons. These are different segments that you get, you know, unfortunately into, and, you know, our patch is happening right in the front end, and it's not to dismiss it. But we are disappointed clearly at where we currently stand, but we know better days are ahead.
We're going to be talking with Marley Rivera about the Yankees' slow start and some of the problems. Sarah Langs has great perspective on the Yankees, their offensive troubles, and also how rare it is that they actually make changes in midseason. And Jessica Mendoza is going to join us. She just threw out the first pitch in Seattle last night, and I still think, although she claimed otherwise, that she may have been nervous doing that. Baseball's back, and so are your favorite teams and players. Catch the best of the bigs all season on ESPN Plus with more than 170 live MLB games featuring every star and every team in the league. Sign up now at ESPNplus.com/baseball. And get ready for the NFL draft with ESPN Radio's coverage on Keyshawn, J. Will, and Zubin weekdays from 6 a.m. to 10 a.m. Eastern. on ESPN Radio and ESPN2. You're getting insights from former number one pick Keyshawn Johnson, along with co-hosts Jay Williams and Zubin Mehente. And you can listen to the show wherever you get your podcast.
Vivid Seats wants to get you to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, and game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part? Each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seats rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As the official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code BASEBALL. That's code BASEBALL. Visit VividSeats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats. Experience it live.
You can now stream the most MLB games on DirecTV without a satellite dish.
Yes, the clutch hits, the strikeouts, grand salamis, web gems, with nothing on your roof. So whoever's up there, whether it's roofers, Santa, birds, old-timey chimney sweeps, moody teenagers, thrill-seeking raccoons, you name it, they won't find a satellite dish. But you will find your MLB games on DirecTV. That means DirecTV is your home for baseball this season. Root, root, root with nothing on your roof. Call 1-800-DIRECTV or visit DirecTV.com. Sign up today. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package.
Jessica Mendoza is an analyst on ESPN Baseball Broadcast. And Jess, last night, you threw out the first pitch before the game between the Dodgers and the Mariners. I texted you the day before and told you not to be nervous. How'd it go?
I was so nervous. And I didn't think I was nervous. And I was on like the Spain and Fitz show right before. And like, just literally, they were like, oh my gosh, we've been practicing. And then talking to you, and then I was getting text messages from people I know, you know, Joe Davis that was there with the Dodgers, and just like, don't screw this up. And I was like, what's the big deal? We play, like, in my mind, being a softball player my whole life, I can throw a ball with my eyes closed and hit a target. You know, it's not a big deal. But then as they did, I didn't know they were going to do this whole video. And then they, like, it was like this highlight.
I saw the video, and they covered basically your whole life. Frank DeBelt threw out more pitches than anybody else in the history of Major League Baseball. And the video that they had for him was probably a lot shorter than yours. The introduction, I should say.
Exactly. So I'm thinking they're going to be like, and here's Jessica Mendoza to throw out the first pitch. Hello, everyone. I'm throwing out the ball and then it's over. But no, it was like this huge, like, big video thing. And I'm like, oh my gosh, I can't screw this up. Plus, because of COVID, you're throwing it from the stand. So I'm like on stairs, like trying to throw it down to someone that was in right field. And I'm like, you know, I'm like, I got this, but I'm like, I got to take something off of it. Cause one, I could like face plant down the stairs, which would be like really awesome. That'll make a highlight reel. Or I skyrocket it and nail Mookie Betts out in center. Like, that's not going to work either. So, I just took a little bit off. I like threw a change up. It was still strike. So I'm proud of that. But I was like, I kind of wish I had like really just reared back, and who cares if I fall? Like, I got to throw it as hard as I can, right? But I didn't.
I've thrown out a first pitch, I want to say 4 or 5 times, you know, in various places. And
look at you.
Well, but I, what I learned during that time was, is that no matter, you know, whether you're you or whether you're a former player, the adrenaline can overtake you to some degree, and you have to get warmed up. Like, you need to get warmed up, and that's, you know, because you don't want to have one of those moments. Were you able to warm up at all before you threw out the first
pitch? No. And they even said, they're like, so normally we take you down in the tunnel and you could warm up. They're like, because of COVID. I mean, it was the weirdest thing. It was just like, here's the ball. You're going to throw it from this step. And I was like, you got to be kidding me. Like, and then here comes this video that's like all of my career, like Stanford, Olympics, like, here she is. I'm like, oh my gosh. And like, but I'm watching the Dodgers just like yelling at me, like just harassing me, like, don't screw up. And my heart was like pounding. I'm like, I threw a ball like 3 million times over the course of my life. Why am I stressed? But yeah, I was definitely nervous. I'm just glad I threw a strike. Hindsight, I wish I just unleashed, and who cares if it went sailing.
Well, you would have cared if it went sailing, because that video would have gone viral. I threw out the first pitch before, I think, a AA All-Star game in Jackson, Tennessee in 2011. And I think it was Ryan Flaherty was catching that day. He went to Vanderbilt, so he's looking out for me. And I wanted to fire it because I play catch all the time. And if he hadn't been 6'2 or 6'3 or whatever he is, I think I might have been in trouble, because it was a high strike. There's no question. All right. You were there for a scary moment last night between the Dodgers and Mariners. Mookie Betts being hit by a pitch. Tell me what you saw.
It was scary. And it was, you know, near the end of the game, and he was nailed. When I remember, I think it was like 94 miles an hour, and you saw immediately it was on some part of his back arm, and he just dropped to his knees. And I was in a section with obviously a bunch of Mariner fans, and even they, I mean, you could just feel the entire stadium just silent. And that's the recognition, even though he was booed when he was coming out to bat, because he's such a huge star, and you know, people just, you know, obviously anti-world champion Dodgers, but they recognize that this is one of the greatest players in the entire game, and he's down on his knees. And there was just such a feeling. And I thought in the moment, I'm like, oh no, like it got his back elbow. Like he's going to be, and I was like nervous, because this is someone people were just staring at him while he's in center field, whether he had a ball or not. I could hear people talking about him and even yelling to him. I mean, this is someone you come to the ballpark and you're going to watch. It doesn't matter what team you're cheering for. You're just a fan of the game. So hearing Dave Roberts say that it got most of his forearm, it's probably just going to be a deep contusion, is what they're guessing. We'll know more obviously today, but in that moment to see him drop to his knees, put his head down for a good while. But he got up and he just kept shaking his arm and ended up at first base. But I'll tell you what, it's one of those where I think, just like Fernando Tatis Jr., when he was hurt, it was scary, because the game needs the stars. Mookie's definitely one of them.
Yeah. And when Dave, and you know, Dave, I mean, he's a glass half full personality. And I saw what he told reporters last night. I kind of wondered if part of his explanation was fingers crossed, you know, that they're hopeful that he's going to be okay. And as you say, we're going to learn more later. We learned more yesterday about Ronald Acuna Jr. He had to come out of Sunday night's game after pointing to his abdomen. He had what the Braves are saying is a mild abdominal strain. You're right. I mean, Fernando Tatis Jr. goes down. Ronald Acuna Jr. goes down. Now we're sitting around wondering about Mookie Betts. Come on. Like, the baseball gods need to treat us better than this.
Right? Especially because we're still in April. Like, we, over the course of the season, we're going to see a lot of great players, you know, get hurt. It's just the nature of 162 games. But within the span of a couple weeks, to see three of the best, you know, definitely not. I mean, Mookie's, I can't imagine, going to play for a little bit. And Fernando Tatis in the moment, you know, just to see his pain, Ronald Acuna Jr., to see him immediately after staying in the game and then later coming out, it's an abdominal strains, even though it's mild, are tricky. And I know you know this. I feel the same way about hand injuries.
Yep.
It's just such a huge part of, I mean, that's the reason why it's called the core. You know, it's a huge core part of everything you do. Fielding, running, especially hitting and deceleration. I'm not going to get all nerdy on you, but I mean, I just remember as a hitter, any kind of tweak in any part of your abdomen was something that you have to make sure that you're 100%. It's not something you come back at 80% and work through, just because of what it provides for the rest of your body and everything you do.
And if you come back a little too soon, you can make it a lot worse, which is why I suspect that the conversation between the Braves and Acuna Jr. will be, how are you feeling? And the day that he says he's 100%, they'll say, okay, we'll take two more days.
No, exactly. That's why when people hear mild abdominal strain, I love that. Yes, the word is mild, but you got to add longer length of time than you would pretty much any other injury that's mild, because of where it's located on his body.
So we have a lot of candidates for the most unlikely developments early in the season. The Mariners, who you saw last night, 11-6. I wouldn't have guessed that. The Red Sox offense being this dominant, them being in first place, the Yankees being in last place. And another one I wanted to ask you about after we got a Bleacher tweet yesterday that I want to note, Jed Lowry hitting 333 so far this year. He's 37 years old. He's played in every Oakland game after just playing in just 9 games for the Mets the last 2 years, in which he went 0-7. I got to tell you, you know, when he reached free agency at the end of that Mets deal during the course of wintertime, I thought, you know what, that might be the end for Jed Lowrie. I guess not.
Yeah, I didn't think so. But I mean, he lives in the town I live in part of the year. So I was able to see him a lot this offseason and even talk to him when I found out they were going to bring him in. The A's were going to bring him in and he was going to start opening day. I was just like, just to hear his process. And obviously he was with the Mets when I was a part of the Mets organization. So just to see his frustrations here, everything the last 2 years, not being able to get the surgery that he wanted, that he needed, that he knew he needed, to finally do that this offseason, he was like, this is the first time I've been able to do the things I need to do and be healthy. And you could just feel, and of course, like, you know, as anyone, you're like, I'm glad he feels this way and is so confident. But to go out, first of all, get picked up by a team. And you got to remember this offseason, like we've seen the last few years, like nobody was getting picked up. And so that see the A's kind of last minute, that 11th hour, bring him in and then start him at second base that first game. I was just more excited that he was able to get back on the field. But to then see the success that he's had, it further proves how much he'd be able to show everyone when I'm healthy, there's a reason I signed this deal. Know, 2 years ago or 3 years ago now with the Mets and was able to continue my career if was able to, you know, it's just been fun to see how hard he worked to get back out there. And honestly, for the A's, and it was an 8-game winning streak right now. The team that they are right now is exciting to watch.
Today, Jesse Rogers on ESPN.com has an interesting story in which he talks to a lot of evaluators about struggles, and in particular, there's struggles against fastballs. You know, their offense has been terrible so far this year, but the amazing thing is their numbers are crazy bad, in particular against fastballs and fastballs in the zone. As Jesse wrote, from 2016 to 2018, the combination of Javi Baez, Anthony Rizzo, and Chris Bryant hit .307 with a .559 slugging percentage against fastballs, but those numbers have dropped since then, culminating .235 and just a .419 slugging percentage over their last team. They have a baseball worst batting average and slugging just .414 against balls. It's crazy. It's crazy how bad they are.
No, and we're last year, and I felt like I kind of threw it out as like, oh, it's COVID. It's one I kind of did with a lot of individual players that struggled. But I remember, you know, doing a couple Cubs and just being blown away by this team. I mean, there's a lot of struggles that are within that lineup and within that team that we've seen, obviously, even since they won it all with those key players. But to see them continue a trend that I really felt like was just some weird blip last year has been just blowing me away, especially those three guys. I mean, look at the bat speed of Javier Baez. And yes, it makes sense when he chases pitches out of the zone and breaking balls. And, you know, that part's like, okay, that's how he's going to struggle. But to see him struggle against fastballs just blows my mind away, because the way his swing, the way he's set up, I mean, there's few people that have better hands in the game than he does to be able to get to that fastball. You know, obviously Anthony Rizzo and Chris Bryant too have proven, as Jesse Rogers wrote about, that they've hit fastballs their entire career. So what is happening? And that's to me is, I think, what blows me away is it started last year. Fine, weird year, I get it. But the fact that it's continuing now into the first few weeks of the season is definitely troubling.
And I like what David Ross told us on Sunday, that he basically has gone to his players and said, look, forget all that normal flip work you've done with the coach to the side, you know, flipping balls to the hitters where they slap them into a net. He's encouraging his players, go and find a pitching machine that generates a lot of speed and hit high velocity. I think he wants to hit it head on, Jess.
Well, yeah, and I honestly am surprised they didn't start with that in spring, just because I feel like it's a great way to get timing, your eyesight, all the things, even just tracking. Like if you throw something out there at like 9,900 miles an hour on a machine and you're just even bunting, tracking it. It just gets like any muscle, it gets the eyes ready and trained for high velocity, and then allowing progressively your body to catch up to that, be able to. It's what we see now, even within the game. I mean, Dustin May was throwing for the Dodgers last night and, you know, hitting 100 miles an hour consistently, and the Mariners had very minimal swing and miss. I mean, they hit two home runs. They were, you know, being able to barrel up and even just make contact with 100 consistently. And that's, I mean, that's the thing now, right? It's like guys are throwing upper 90s, 100 miles an hour. And yes, it's going to phase people somewhat, but nothing like it would have even 5 years ago. So to me, that's part of what I totally am with David Ross. Absolutely. But that should have been done, like, and maybe it was, but like back in spring, just part of your training to kind of get, all right, let's get used to what we're going to see in season, which is a lot of high velocity fastballs.
All right, Jess. Well, you know, good luck today recovering from that traumatic first pitch experience.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Well, it's beautiful here in Seattle. And I'm not going to lie, Buster, to be able to be at a game as a fan. It's been a long time since I've been at a game, been doing games from home. I know you've had the opportunity to be in stadiums, but I walked from the hotel with my husband to the ballpark. It was 70 degrees in Seattle. Anyone who's ever been in Seattle with the sun out, I don't think there's a better place. So anyway, I was giddy. I felt like I was 10 years old. My husband was like, can you walk slower? I was literally like skipping. I'm just so excited to go to a ball game. So it's cool to have fans back in the stands. It was awesome to actually be one of them, even if I was a nervous, person throwing out a first pitch.
Have fun, Jess.
All right. Thanks, Buster.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of the show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Buster. Just go to Indeed.com/Buster right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/Buster. Terms and conditions apply.
The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
This is The Numbers Game with Sarah Langs.
Sarah Langs, reporter, producer for MLB.com. You know, and Sarah, with that open you have right there, I got to tell you, I mean, it's so cool. And the guitar riff starts and then it just gets cut off. And I kind of want to hear the rest of the guitar riff. What about you?
Absolutely. I mean, you see, I'm always smiling here as it comes in. But yeah, I mean, I could listen to the whole thing, but I'd rather talk with you.
So yesterday we got word, I got off the plane flying back from Chicago, and there were frantic texts from various people who I work for, who I worked with, and they're saying, Brian Cashman, there's going to be a press conference, press availability, 12:30 a.m. is something, or 12:30 p.m. Something big coming. And my instinct was no. I know Brian Cashman a long time, and I know that his belief is that when the team is struggling, he should make himself available and be accountable. But also B, while in New York, there's always speculation about, is this change coming, or is that person going to get fired? Is the manager going to be fired? The last Yankees manager to be fired midseason was Bucky Dent in 1990. Like, this is not something they do on a regular basis.
No, not at all. And so, you know, you asked me the question of, is that the, are they the last team to have, or the longest ago team to have done that? Has every team done that since? And my instinct when you asked me the question was, of course. I mean, that's a very Yankee thing to be the longest ago having done, and it makes total sense. But I ran it, and it's actually not. So there are two teams that have actually gone longer since changing managers in season. And those teams are the Minnesota Twins and the San Francisco Giants. So the Minnesota Twins have not changed managers in season since 1986. And the Giants, it was in 1985. So all in that same range, basically a five-year span there. But the Yankees actually are not the longest to go team to have done this.
I think you would agree with me. It is a shocking statistic, given how, generally speaking, in a major media market, people lose their minds.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, you know, I was seeing the same thing. We see the announcement of the Cashman press conference, and you see the conversation on Twitter. You have people saying things. And I was sitting here like, there's just no way. That's not, first of all, that's not where the fault is right now. I mean, this team isn't hitting. We'll get into that further. And second of all, it's just, you know, New York media, it's always, I mean, any big city, it's always going to be further on display. But it's interesting to me, the Twins and the Giants as those teams that have gone longer since changing managers in season. I guess that if I thought about it, I might have guessed the Giants, because I couldn't just off the top of my head think of an instance. And I think the Twins, I mean, this honestly reminds me of in football, you think of the Pittsburgh Steelers and how they've had like three coaches all time. I know it's a couple more than that, but you think of those teams that just stay steady, even when they're not great, they're just going to stick with the guy. And I can see how those franchises might be on the list too.
And I bet you when you inform your mother that the Giants, the team that has had the most stability through the year, she'll be really proud as a longtime Giants fan.
Absolutely. Right. First text after we talk here, I'll let her know.
All right, let's play the numbers game.
Number three.
So number three is 48. So Shane Bieber now has 48 strikeouts this season. On Sunday, he was absolutely unbelievable. I'm watching this start, and his last few starts, he's almost looked like he isn't going to get to 10 strikeouts early on. And all of a sudden, he ends up with 10, 11, 12, 13, whatever it might be. So 48 strikeouts in his first four appearances this year. That's tied with Nolan Ryan in 1978 for the most for any pitcher through four appearances in a season. The great part was he was too shy of Nolan Ryan. It seems like he was done for the day at like 97 pitches. So I sent the tweet out, and then he came back out. So I have all of these people telling me he has 48 strikeouts, not 46, but it's because he came back out because he's that unbelievable. He's the first pitcher ever with 10 strikeouts specifically in each of his first four starts in a year. I mean, it's every single time he comes out, it's like you need to get the history book ready.
Number two
is 30. So Shane Bieber gets a lot of credit for that, and I want to give him, you know, all of that love for what he did on Sunday. But Corbin Burnes this year has been really, really good, also with some really cool strikeout records. So want to make sure he gets his due heading into a start today. So he has 30 strikeouts and no walks this season. He's the first player ever with 30 strikeouts and no walks through his first three starts in a season. And so the record that he's chasing now is a pretty fun one. It's the most strikeouts before your first walk in a season. So the overall record since 1893, when the mound was moved to its current distance, is Kenley Jansen 2017 with 51. But if we're curious about starters, that record is Adam Wainwright in 2013. He had 35 strikeouts before he reached his first walk. So Corbin Burnes pitching today, fifth strikeout, when he gets to his 35th strikeout, if he does before he walks anybody, he could, you know, tie and then pass at least the starter's record.
Number one
is 210. So that's what the Yankees are hitting this season through 15 games. That's their worst batting average through 15 games in a season since they hit 186 in 1968, which was their worst through 15 games in any season. And of course, 1968, year of the pitcher, we know all that happened, but it wasn't just the Yankees being bad that year. That was not great either. They've only had three seasons overall where they had a lower batting average through 15 games than they have this year. And it was 1968, 1913, and 1966. So we really haven't seen this from them. And I would say that, you know, to Yankees fans sitting at home who, whether you're optimistic or pessimistic, if you're optimistic and, you know, the number that's been out there is it's their worst start since 1997 and that worked out okay. I would say they weren't hitting like this in 1997. They were hitting better. And if you look overall at what they are doing, it's kind of no surprise they have the record that they have, but we know how much talent is there. I think that the offense can get it together. My question is more the pitching, because we've talked about how it was a very high risk, high reward rotation. I think we're seeing the results of that high risk.
Yeah, they need their offense to get going. I mean, that's, talk about Captain Obvious with a statement right there, but to build in the margin for error that they needed with other parts of their team. And that's part of what's going on here. And I'm with you. I think eventually they're going to start to hit. And if they don't start to hit, then we will, you know, be talking about changes coming with the team at some point at the end of the year. All right. Before you go, over the weekend, I reported that the Cubs leading into the 2020 season before COVID manifested, offered Javi Baez a deal somewhere in the range of $180 million. Sean Heyman reports it's somewhere 160, 170. Either way, it was really big money at that time. What do you make of that?
I mean, I think that seeing that number and when you put that out, I mean, that made sense to me as a deal for him. I think that he could have some trouble, you know, matching that this offseason. We've talked about, you know, Lindor is now off the market for this offseason, but there's still a bunch of really good shortstops. And I will say he's an electric player. He's such a fun player to watch when he's on, especially his defense, everything else. But I don't necessarily see his production over the last few years as in the same category of the Trevor Stories and the Corey Seagers and the Carlos Correas, the other guys that we will be talking about at that position. I think that for him, he's always been kind of a unicorn succeeding with kind of bad plate discipline. And it works for him for a couple of years. Absolutely. But it's, you know, anyone who knows the game knows that that's not necessarily supposed to work. And I think that that's what we've seen, you know, especially over the last 2 years. And you guys had a great graphic you ran on Sunday Night Baseball, looking at the pitches he's swung at in 2021 and the pitches Ronald Acuna Jr. has swung at. And obviously that's maybe the best hitter in baseball right now, this exact second, in Acuna, and then Javi Baez, who is struggling. But you saw, I mean, it was all over the place, the pitches that he was swinging at. And I just think that that may be one specific thing, but it's just a clue into whether his game is necessarily built for long-term success.
All right, Sarah, always enjoy talking with you. Hey, can you email me those notes on the Yankees offense? Because I'm doing a SportsCenter hit later and I'm going to steal from you.
Absolutely, will do. And thank you so much for having me.
Thanks, Sarah. Carly Rivera covers baseball for ESPN and spends a lot of her days around the New York Yankees. And yesterday was an off day for the Yankees, Marley, but you knew that you knew that the conversation would continue after this lousy start. And we'll get into that in a second. How are you doing before we get going?
Now we're doing well. You know, we have baseball back. And even though what happened with the Twins reminds us that it's still not normal yet, Buster, we're getting close.
Yeah, exactly. So I'm sure you got the same type of text that I did yesterday when, you know, word broke out that Brian Cashman, the Yankees general manager, was going to hold press availability at 12:30. People are wondering, is someone going to get fired? Is there going to be a change with staff? And, you know, as we just talked about with Sarah Langs, the Yankees haven't fired a manager in season since 1990. And my instinct right away when I saw this was, this is classic Brian Cashman, who's been the general manager for more than 20 years, basically saying, you know what? On an off day, I know these guys are going to be looking for a story, and I'm going to go out there and I'm going to be the red meat for them. What'd you think?
Absolutely. And one of the first things that Brian Cashman does, as the pro that he is in baseball, and you know this, Buster, is that on off days, you know, all of us who cover the Yankees, and you have done that for a long time, will text Cashman, right? Like, just to check. And he literally, you know, the Yankees send this email out specifically, you know, stating Brian Cashman will hold court. And that's precisely what he does.
Yeah. And his strategy when he has these is he's like, come at me with any question you got.
Yeah. No, exactly. And I mean, I asked him maybe, you know, two of the more entertaining questions to Brian Cashman. And the first one that I asked him was, you know, what have the Yankees shown so far with their 5-10 record? What kind of team have they shown to be? And he relished the question. He said, you know, we're an easy team to beat right now, but that's not who we are. And then what Brian Cashman does is that he decides to make this statement, right? And his very important statement. And in my question, which is not what I asked him, but he went ahead and said, the reason why I'm on here right now is because I want to state that we're not pointing fingers. And this is our team, and we are all responsible for what's happening, and everything will change as of Tuesday. So it's just very interesting how he chooses these moments and relishes in them. I mean, it's really amazing. It was 45 minutes, you know, basically, you know, as you and I were talking before coming on, calling it the filibuster, right? When Cashman goes in filibuster mode, does exactly what happened, and basically just taking all the blame. It's like, here, you can come at me, but don't come at my manager and don't come at my players.
Yeah, he had reminded me yesterday in listening to that when I covered David Cone, the longtime pitcher, when he was on the Yankees, what he would tell the other players was, look, just tell him you stink and say it's your fault. And even if you don't believe it, just say it, because then there are really no questions to follow up with that.
And you may criticize, you know, Brian Cashman's style, and anyone can say, you know, whatever they want of Brian Cashman has done. But Brian Cashman is a pro. And one of the things that he does very, very well is he takes that executive role very clearly. Like, for example, when you have a problem with any employee in any industry, right, when you have the manager take it on and say, this is my responsibility because I'm in charge, then that really kind of diffuses the blame a little bit. But I mean, basically, Brian Cashman came on because all the New York columnists and every paper in town said, fire Aaron Boone and your team stinks. And he wants to be there saying, you know what? I am right here. Come at me.
Yep. And I think it's pretty simple where they are, Marley. They are where they are because they're not hitting. 26 in batting average. They're tied for 24th in runs. Giancarlo Stanton is hitting under 200. And Gleyber Torres is hitting under 200. And Aaron Hicks is hitting under 200. And a lot of guys are not performing to their regular levels offensively. I do think over 162 games, those guys, their performances will stabilize. I don't know if I think this is a team built for success in the postseason, because there's not a lot of versatility in the offense. But in the regular season, yeah, eventually they turn around. And you know what? If they don't, guess what? It's not a very good team.
That's precisely it. I mean, one of the things that I've been kind of confused is the identity of this team. And I've covered the Yankees like you for a very, very long time. And one of the things that's happening is that when they asked me in the preseason previews that you and I do for ESPN, you know, who's going to win the AL East? One of the things that you look at is the three classic categories, the starting rotation, the relievers, right? And then they're hitting their lineup. And the Yankees were the only team that could fight on those three, you know, in all fronts. You were kind of questioning, you know, the starting pitching, but you certainly did not worry about one of the relievers at the time with Zach Britton, right? Like at that time. And of course, their lineup. And none of these things are clicking right now. Well, let's be fair. The relievers were doing a wonderful job until the starting pitching can't hold anything, right? They can't throw any innings except Gerrit Cole. So then they're a little bit taxed, but the lineup is not doing their job. And that's the main thing. And that's the one thing that you could not worry about the Yankees. They're like, really? Like this lineup, when you look at it up and down, it is incredible at this point that the Yankees are actually leading in strikeouts, thanks to Gerrit Cole, and not in home runs and not in runs scored. And that's what's really interesting about this team. And one of the things that happened, I liken it to what happened with Gary Sanchez. No one cared how many pass balls Gary Sanchez had at that point when he was hitting 30-something home runs. So that's exactly what's happening to the Yankees. So every glaring mistake that they make, every base running mistake, every defensive gaffe is magnified because they're not hitting. But I really think, Buster, I'm with you. This is a team that is going to win over a 90 game. They're going to be fine. People are freaking out. Stop throwing stuff on the field. It's okay that you're frustrated with your team, but don't throw stuff on the field. And you know what? The Yankees are going to be fine because these things do self-correct in a 162 season. If it was 60, I would not be so sure.
Okay, the guy who I'm most surprised about with a slow start is not Giancarlo Stanton, who you and I both know and have seen. He tends to be a streaky player. He has his ups and downs, and right now he's in a down, and eventually he'll go on a run, and some of his numbers will stabilize. It's not Aaron Hicks, who also in the past has been streaky. Gleyber Torres surprises me because I thought he looked great in spring training.
Yeah, that was one of I knew precisely that's where we were going to go, because one of the guys that really looked fantastic in spring training on both sides of the ball, his defensive work, particularly working with Carlos Mendoza, had shown such improvement. And at the plate, he was clicking in earlier than anybody else, right? Aaron Judge started slow. Aaron Hicks started slow. Giancarlo Stanton always starts slow, and it's so streaky. So, you know, and we know what's happened, you know, with Gary Sanchez. We don't really know who he is at the plate right now. But then you didn't worry about Gleyber Torres. And when you have to start worrying about Gleyber Torres, then the Yankees have a problem. And another one that's not clicking is also Clint Frazier. We saw Clint Frazier in the spring just performing so well and being so incredible, like a spark plug in that lineup that really needs one. And that's one thing that Gleyber Torres does for that lineup. He's that little spark plug, and that's not happening.
Yeah, and just to follow up on Clint Frazier, you're right. I'm surprised he struggled at the outset. I've seen this happen with other teams, not only the Yankees, but when a team goes through extensive struggles offensively, the guy who ultimately pays the price is the youngest, least established player. Yeah. Because you know they're not taking Stanton out of the lineup. You know they're not taking, you know, if DJ LeMahieu was part of the problem, they're not taking him out. It's going to be the youngest guys, which is even today in New York, you know, columns written about, okay, you got to try somebody else in Clint Frazier's spot. That's just a natural way it goes.
Absolutely. I mean, and obviously Clint Frazier has very public fails, right? Like it was one of these things. So he's an easy target. And that's really, really unfair for a player that is incredibly talented and who hasn't been able to even play regularly yet. And this is something that we predicted, Buster. We talked about this when the Yankees signed Brett Gardner. We knew Brett Gardner is the kind of guy who is not going to sit on the bench. And when situations are happening like right now that the Yankees are struggling, who else are you going to put in that lineup than the guy who is a better defensive player at this point in his career and the last guy to be in this team that actually knows what it is to go to a World Series? So it definitely is important, right, for them to have Gardner, but then this takes away playing time from Clint Frazier, who needs it. When is he ever going to be a major leaguer and a starting left fielder if you don't put 77 on the field?
That's exactly right. All right, Marley, thanks for doing this.
Of course, Kit, you have a very nice day. Anything that you need, just let me know.
Bleacher Tweets.
Alrighty, Buster. Bleacher Tweets for a Tuesday. First up, we have Tom Niemann at Niemann19. He writes in, with the White Sox using two position players in one game to pitch and seeing other teams do the same this early, do you think we'll see more position players pitch in games this year due to less minor league players, delay to the season, etc.?
Tom, I got to say, it's been a surprise that there have been this many position players used early. We saw the sport seem to veer away from that last year. The conversation within the sport was, this is kind of getting out of control of position players pitching. So to see it early this year, I think that there's going to be an adjustment. And if you told me that behind the scenes, the Players Association was raising red flags about this in its conversations with Major League Baseball, that wouldn't surprise me. Yeah, they're not playing minor league games, but they are playing, having competition at these alternate sites. So there certainly is pitching available.
Next up, we have Chris Brock at Chris Brock 57. He writes in, thoughts on Castellanos' suspension being upheld. I think it's ridiculous. You received two games, but Molina received nothing. When it was Molina who barreled through the ump and grabbed Castellanos by the back of the neck, violating COVID protocols. Chris, I think we're on the same page with this one.
Yeah, 100%, Chris. Taylor and I, at the top of the show, we talked about this. I was surprised that it was being upheld. I thought for sure that it was going to be reduced from 2-1 game.
Major League Baseball, come on, guys. Next up, we have John Chacona at John Chacona writes in, Williams Astudillo is tied for the AL lead in ERA. Will he get any Cy Young votes, or is this a small sample size phenomenon?
Yeah, John, as I prepped and I was going through these questions, I was sipping coffee and he made me spit out my coffee. I burst out laughing because, of course, Astudillo is a position player. And I love the irony in your question. It was perfect.
And last one for today, Matt Upton at Matt R. Upton writes in, I know Acuna Jr. is young and the future of the game and that he plays on the East Coast and should be a main story. But what about Jed Lowry's start to the season? Can he get a few mentions for his start and comeback? Also, the A's decision to pick him up.
Yeah, Matt, you heard me talking with Jessica Mendoza about Jed Lowry. I will tell you that conversation was prompted by you because I saw your question on Twitter yesterday and I was like, you know what? That's a fair question. I got the Stanford alum coming up. I know Jess will have some perspective on Jed Lowry's good start.
Alrighty, that does it for Bleacher Tweets. #BleacherTweets on Twitter, and please follow, rate, and review this podcast wherever you listen to your podcasts.
That's it for today. My thanks to Jess, Marley, Sarah, Taylor. Have a great day, everybody. Thanks for listening. Stay safe. And remember, hate and inequality based on skin color is something we need to fight against every single day.
Thanks for listening to the Baseball Tonight podcast. If you're playing fantasy baseball, check out the Fantasy Focus podcast wherever you listen to podcasts. The Baseball Tonight podcast.